bunch of, you know, guys on the other side of the world who actually believe the same thing. They're all individuals, and you know, you find pictures of their wives and kids, mm-hmm. you know, that kind of mm-hmm. thing. I mean, it sounds relatively simple, but it speaks to exactly what we're talking about. That idea of you start and these people on the other side are, you know, they deserve to die. They're animals, and the guys on the other side believe the same thing. And then through circumstance, it changes.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And of course. Of course, mostly people just, you know, they want to kind of be decent, most people, and have an opportunity to live their lives and raise their kids in a half-decent way. But we are very lucky. I mean, look what happened in Haiti 48 hours ago, 2 days ago.
The world's response to Haiti is quite fascinating, actually, because there's a big response to Haiti.
Yeah, and it's
and I liked Obama's response to Haiti. It was intense, you know? It was, like, really serious and intense. And he just said, no, we need compassion for this right now.
This is the poorest country in the Western Hemisphere. And, you know, I mean, you know, at the best of times, and I use that term very loosely, Haiti's in terrible shape. And now, 10 miles, 15 kilometers from the center of a city of 2 million, Port-au-Prince, apparently the destruction is unbelievable.
Yeah, the pictures are not good.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's ugly. Yeah. Ugly.
So send the Canadian government, once again, the way they did a few years ago with the tsunami in Indonesia and Africa, they will match your donation to a whole group of recognized charities.
Oh, yeah.
And so if you send a dollar, the Canadian government will send another dollar. Huh. So that's a good way of reacting to the situation, because I was early this morning, woke up, and I listening to the radio, and of course hearing these images, and you just you know how helpless we are. I mean, that speaks again. Speaks again of what technology has done in the last 20 years, 30 years, that we know things so quickly now. You know, even in a place where the phone lines are out, the cell towers are out, but there are satellite phones and there are images all, you know, almost instantly of people there, and I remember even in the 40s, my father, who was a diplomat, he lamented the fact that even by the time he was in the service, by the late 50s and early 60s, and he'd be a guy, one of the three or four guys. Head guys at an embassy or a high commission, and those guys couldn't buy toilet paper without sending a coded message back to Ottawa. Whereas 20 or 30 years before, they made decisions. When they're in the middle of Africa or China or somewhere, they made decisions because they couldn't communicate with Ottawa. And now everything, you know, it's so everybody communicates with everybody now, uh-huh. except for all those Chinese people.
Well, they can communicate with each other.
Yeah, that's true.
I'm going to communicate another couple of stories that I think. You know,
are they happy
stories?
We've
talked about radical Islam, et cetera, and mm-hmm. the interface between America and the East, et cetera. I like this story very much. This comes from the English newspaper, The Guardian. Mohammed Asaduddin, he's a 28-year-old New York taxi driver, originally from Bangladesh, I believe. He found on Christmas Eve... He found a handbag containing more than $21,000 in the back of his cab, in cash. $21,000 in cash.
Unmarked bills.
And jewelry worth thousands more. On the back seat, Christmas Eve, Bangladeshi-born cabbie rummaged through the bag until he found an address in Long Island. Rang a friend with a car and then drove 50 miles to that address, because there was no phone number, hoping to find someone who knew who this bag belonged to. Mm-hmm. And the bag actually belonged to a 72-year-old woman called Felicia Lettieri, who's from Pompeii.
Old money.
Yes. Knocks on the door at the house. It's actually Lettieri's sister's house. Nobody's home. So he left a little note on the door with his mobile number and a message that read, "Don't worry, Felicia, I'll keep it safe." Ooh. Yeah.
And that's it? That's all?
That's all he said. Asaduddin, he is a student, and he's working as a taxi driver because he lost his job in a factory a few months ago. He said they were so happy Now, Felicia Lethierry's absent-mindedness, you know, she forgot the bag while she and six other relatives were traveling in two taxis to Penn Station. It also contained some of the group's passports, so it was critical for them.
Oh, wow.
Police had already advised them that they had very little chance of ever recovering any of this stuff. It was untraceable. The cabbie, of course, shrugged the incident off, saying that he'd been taught never to take advantage of people. He said, "My mother is my inspiration. She always said, be honest and work hard." He said he was never tempted. He said, "My heart said this is not good." He also declined any reward.
Interesting.
Refused it, saying that as a Muslim, he could not accept a reward for simply behaving correctly. It's a beautiful story.
Yeah.
He says, "I am needy, but I am not greedy. It's better to be honest." Now, this is not as rare as many people would think. I mean, even a couple of years ago, there's a Grammy-nominated violinist called Philippe Quint who left his $4 million Stradivarius in a New Jersey taxi. And, you know, the 285-year-old violin, he thought he'd never see it again.
Yeah, but trying to fence a Stradivarius, that's a bit tough.
Well, Mohammed Khalil was the driver, another Muslim. He returned the precious instrument. Quint handed Khalil a $100 tip and free tickets to Carnegie Hall. And then he gave a curbside recital at the airport taxi rank to an audience of about 50 cabbies.
Cool.
But I think it's really important that stories like this get disseminated at the time that, you know, we get the idea that all Muslims are terrorists, and then you kind of go, oh, well, then there are these taxi drivers who are behaving in an impeccably honest way, which belongs to a society that is not quite as competitive as the American capitalist society, which says, you got to seize the moment and take what you can, you know? Which is not to say that an American taxi driver wouldn't behave the same way, and yet the honesty of a taxi driver who hands back $21,000 in cash is enough of a surprise to make a story in the New York Times, and you kind of go, well, then that says something about the society we're living in.
All right, here's my little, coming from an agnostic, I suppose. The other night, a week ago, I was at a restaurant with six people, and we all split the bill and put it on our credit card. So there were four or five credit cards, each with $76 on them. And then I got an email yesterday from one of them saying that he was dinged twice for $76. So I looked at mine, and as it turned out, I was not charged.
Mm-hmm.
And so I said jokingly to the woman at the Visa who confirmed that I was not charged, oh, well, now I have a crisis of conscience. Should I pay my friend back the $76? But, of course, yes, I will. So there you go.
Well, you have to now.
I have to now. Now everybody, oh, damn it, I didn't think of that.
Oh.
No, of course,
But that's one thing.
But it doesn't even cross my mind.
That's your friend.
Yeah, it's interesting.
Yeah?
I mean,
as opposed to a pile of cash, and you go, I'm a poor student struggling to make do, and here is the money.
Here he has lost his job.
And he could have said, this is a sign from Allah.
Yeah.
Yeah? This is gift from Allah.
Right.
Now I can
Or just a random act of kindness from the universe.
Yeah, or a random act of kindness from the universe. Now, Charlie has wandered into the studio and is pacing the halls, getting the groove into his body. He's here to sweeten your morning with some hot jazz from the 20s, 30s, 40s.
But we can fill your brains with five more minutes.
And we have five more minutes of crap for you.
Yeah.
So, as Orson Welles says, when you are down and out, something always turns up, and it is usually the noses of your wealthy friends. Thanks, Orson. Thanks for that.
Yeah. Very good.
Yeah. So, what are we going to talk about for the last 5 minutes? You want to talk about Greenpeace?
And
the Sea Shepherd.
Did you see that boat that got chopped?
Yeah,
that
the bat boat.
Apparently, it broke a world record for going around the world. It's this big honking speedboat, you know, with big pontoons out the side.
I have facts.
It looks like the bat boat.
A little. Let me diddle you with facts.
Yeah, cool.
Because what's happened now, of course, is it's reignited the argument between the Sea Shepherd Group and Greenpeace. The damage inflicted to the Sea Shepherd Conservation Society boat Addie Gill in the collision with a whaling ship is likely to reignite a row. Paul Watson, he helped set up Greenpeace in 1972. He now heads the Sea Shepherd, labeled an eco-terrorist by his ex-friends at Greenpeace.
Did you realize that he worked at the Georgia Strait? He's a good friend of Dan McLeod.
At the Georgia Strait, yeah. Yes. Well, yes. He's been in a long-running feud with Greenpeace. Greenpeace, in fact, refuses to cooperate with Sea Shepherd by sharing information on whaling fleets, etc., because Sea Shepherd uses what Greenpeace considers to be violent tactics. Watson counters this by saying his methods yield results, and he claims that he has sunk 10 whaling ships with no injuries caused, which is a surprise to me. I can see your eyebrows raising as well.
Well, I hadn't heard that claim. I'd heard him claim, actually, live a day after. He said he claimed that he has saved a lot of whales. He's just crippled the Cetacean Society. It's some false, they keep talking about the scientific society. Cetaceans, as in whales. But
scientific research, as in, oh, that toro tastes good.
Exactly.
Oh, that toro tastes
They take 800 whales, or they want to take about 800 whales a year, including humpbacks and stuff. Mm-hmm. They're mostly menkies, mm-hmm. but. That's neither here nor there. So menkies aren't endangered, but humpbacks are hugely endangered, and they all end up in the Tokyo fish markets.
Watson is number 8 member of Greenpeace. His old Greenpeace car says 0008, but he founded Sea Shepherd's forerunner Earth Force in 77, the same year he was voted off Greenpeace's board of directors. There were concerns within Greenpeace over his methods, particularly over an incident where he pulled a club from a sealer's hand and threw the club into the water, which for Greenpeace was considered an act of violence. You know, it stepped across the line and became a physical fight. Watson's departure highlighted the ideological differences. Labeled an eco-terrorist by Greenpeace, Watson responded by calling them the Avon ladies of the environmental movement. Watson claims they've never forgiven him for that. In 2008, of course, he called his former organization Yellowpeace. Because they weren't willing to carry on chasing the Japanese fleet around, Greenpeace prefers to concentrate on changing public opinion in Japan. And now Watson says that Sea Shepherd is not a protest organization. He says, we intervene against illegal activities, and as far as we're concerned, Japanese whalers are poachers. Despite or perhaps because of his outspoken opinions, Watson has won a lot of supporters, including Dalai Lama, which is interesting, and Mick Jagger, which is probably less interesting, Daryl Hannah and Uma Thurman, which are interesting in a different way. Yeah, they've even earned the dubious honor of being parodied by South Park in an episode called Whale Whores. Where Watson and his activists were depicted as vegan pussies who were posing as pirates. Watson ended up getting harpooned through the head. Meanwhile, that's humor. The Addie Gill was formerly known as Earth Race, top speed of 50 knots, and it was able to dive under waves completely. That was supposed to give the speed to intercept the harpooner vessels, which were, because this boat was twice as fast as the harpoon vessels. $1.5 million biodiesel-fueled boat has come a cropper. And I would bet that's going to not do that much good to Watson and
there's
his
footage.
Sea Shepherd
Did you see the footage of it?
Yeah.
It crashed right in the front and chopped a big piece off the bow of the Addie Gill, is it called?
The Addie Gill. Yeah.
lest anybody doesn't realize that it's not like the Japanese are whaling in their own waters. They're going thousands of miles into the South Atlantic around Antarctica, by the way, just to let you know. There you go, international waters.
So it's time to give over the microphone to Charlie, and that's exactly what we were going to do. A couple of thoughts to leave you with. One of them is, do not be too moral. You cheat yourself of much life. Be not simply good, be good for something. So says Henry Thoreau. You don't like that.
That's a little saccharine.
It's just a little saccharine. Yeah. Be good for something. Well, it's a good idea. Yeah. Okay, how about Albert Einstein? Education is what remains after you've forgotten everything you've learned in school.
Oh, I like that.
Okay, so forget everything you've learned in school and Bob's your uncle. Thanks very much for tuning in. Thanks very much for Charlie and your patience. And this is the end of the end of the end of the world news. Thanks very much, Graham, for being here.
Thank you.
Gulesh will be back in the chair next week, and we'll be back in a fortnight's time to pepper your ears with the spice of international events. In the meantime, can I push this button? Here comes Charlie with some sweet hot jazz.